Have a new agenda? I don't have one.
Let's see here. Okay.
I know.
No.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Julie Fedorchak. I'm chair of the Public Service Commission, and I want to call the today's meeting into order. It is March 11th at 1 o'clock, which is a slight variation. Okay, it's hard enough to say it once, Daryl. Nobody wants to hear it twice.
I empathize.
What's that for?
Sorry about that.
Is that just for your own use?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I want to make sure you're working.
Okay, I guess we're working. All right, sorry. March 11th, 12th floor of the State Capitol. It's 1 o'clock, a variation from our normal commission time of 10 a.m., but Commissioner Culk requested the change, and we were able to accommodate. So here we are. We're glad everyone got the notice of that time change. And so we'll get this meeting underway. In terms of opening comments, my opening comments focus on our budget. We have our budget hearing tomorrow in the House, and we came out of the Senate with half of what we had asked for in terms of new programs. They approved the State Rail Supplemental Safety Program, and they removed, out of caution for the still questions that remain in the revenue picture, they removed the pipeline. The Hazardous Materials Pipeline Safety Program. We'll be going back to the House and asking for them to reconsider that program. We continue to think that that's really important. And I just wanted to emphasize today that I think both those programs are really important, both the rail safety and the pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Program. Two key areas of public concern and interest, two key regulatory areas long-term for efficiently and appropriately regulating the growing energy industry in the state. And I think it's appropriate for state officials to be doing that, not being at the mercy of the federal government for those key program areas. So we'll be making our case to the House tomorrow and hope to have some positive results there. I think that's all that I'll talk about for now with the opening comments, and I'll turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Crisman.
Two things. Yesterday was kind of an energy day at the legislature and kind of a last-minute arrangement, but we ended up hosting a group that came up here, and there were kind of a wide variety of people. I don't know all of their backgrounds. Some were grain growers. Some were more energy-related. Some were with organized labor, and we had, a nice dialogue and nice conversation, some good questions out of those folks and good comments. So really enjoyed that. And also I'll beat Commissioner Culk to the punch and commend the Bison on winning the Summit League Championship last night.
Yeah,
great game.
Nothing to it. The guy helped, right?
They're on a roll, those Bison.
They beat South Dakota State again. That's awesome. Are you done, Commissioner Crisman? I don't want to steal your time. Do you what do you do downstairs? You yield your remaining time to your colleague from
that's in Washington.
Okay. So thank you, Commissioner Crisman, for queuing it up. Certainly everybody from NDSU land is excited about that game. But I'll tell you that the South Dakota State team played really well, and going into that game, it was just exciting that a team from the Summit League gets to go to the big dance. So and it looks like maybe Kansas will be playing or maybe Iowa State, so we'll see where that goes. On a lighter note, too, Daryl, I empathize with you on the iPad. My colleagues were there when I asked a question at a hearing, and my iPad is at the desk, and Siri came out, "I do not understand. I do not understand," and it kept echoing that, and I didn't know how to turn it off. So, Daryl, you did a better job on that. So full agenda today. We've got some things. I'm sure there'll be some questions, but I do want to just close my final thoughts with, I don't know if some of you saw the news, but we lost, I think it's 11 service members last night in a helicopter crash down in Florida. So I called a bunch of my friends down that are down at MacDill, but it was four Army pilots and seven Special Forces Marines. So it was a training exercise, but you know they train the way they fight, so they're going to train in all weather. So even though they're not actively engaged, it's still risky out there, so we'll see the names are all released, but I'm certainly I know some folks involved down there. So
it's too bad. Yeah, we can't express our appreciation to those folks enough for all they do in battle and in training, obviously. Okay. Is that all your opening comments?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. We'll move on to our agenda. We have a number of items on the consent agenda. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just a note from my colleagues. There was a last-minute change I made on CBK2 and CBK3. We changed the amounts to 549, lowered it to 326, and 563, lowered to 326. Just did a small admin glitch that when we were double-checking our calculations, we noticed that we had that incorrectly. So got that fixed, and it is certainly correct now.
Commissioner Kalk, since those all those telephone items are in your portfolio, would you mind just giving a quick little overview of what
yeah,
they are?
Absolutely. They range in cost from $63 all the way up to $1,000. Every year we go through the publication of the changes in intrastate, interstates. We actually had a hearing in one of those cases. So we process the cost of all that internally to the PSC when the end of the season, if you will, when all those rates become final. We then request reimbursement from the company is the way that the Century Code allows us to do. So they reimburse us for the costs we've already expended to do those cases.
Excellent. Thank you.
And there are 43 items in consent. That might be a record.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, moving over to our regular agenda. I do not have any items in my portfolio, so we'll turn it over to Commissioner Christman.
Pretty light, and I'd make some smart comments about you not having any portfolio items, but 2 weeks ago I didn't, so I
think
better reserve those comments.
It's been intentional so I can work on the budget presentation.
Okay. RC1, I move the Commission adopt the order in case number GE-14-595, revoking warehouse license number 1164 of Grand Forks Bean Company Incorporated at Grand Forks, North Dakota, effective March 8th of 2015.
Second.
As just a reminder, on January 16th of this year, the Commission issued an ex parte cease and desist order against Grand Forks Bean and a corresponding notice of opportunity for hearing. So that is the reality. Even aside from that, and as I point out the rest of this case, it's important to not confuse their bond with their license, because their bond does not come due at the same time as their license. So keeping that in mind when those aren't used interchangeably. The grain warehouse bond for Grand Forks Bean was scheduled to expire on March 7th. And the licensee had until February 5th, which is 30 days before that expiration date, to file their replacement bond. So, of course, the ex parte cease and desist had been issued, so it wasn't a surprise when February 5th came along and they had not filed their replacement bond. But when it was not filed, by February 5th, suspension notices were mailed to Grand Forks Bean, and the notices were posted. On February 11th, the commission issued an order suspending the warehouse license number 1164 to Grand Forks Bean, effective February 5th, for lack of the adequate bond, and issued a notice of opportunity to be heard. On February 12th, the next day, the warehouse license number 1164 was returned to the commission. But despite having it, just in order to wrap up the case with this motion, they had until till March 7th to submit a written request for hearing. No request was received, and so this just effectively wraps up the case that license is revoked.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-107, granting the request of Dakota Spirit Ag Energy, LLC, to operate a 1,840,000 bushel grain warehouse at Spiritwood, North Dakota, effective March 30 of 2015.
Second.
And while my fellow commissioners have it in front of them, for the press, I'll point out that when I say Ag Energy, that's kind of one word. It's capital A, G, capital E, and then the rest of energy. Dakota Spirit is owned by Midwest Ag Energy Group, which also owns Blue Flint Ethanol, located in, at Underwood. So they have been, we've been working with them for a number of years. Dakota Spirit anticipates it will be ready to receive grain at Spiritwood on March 30th as construction of this ethanol facility is in its final phase. In September of last year, the commission issued a grain warehouse license to Dakota Spirit Ag Energy for a grain warehouse at Wimbledon. And that license was obtained to secure additional corn inventories for the Spiritwood facility. Dakota Spirit anticipates it will purchase, get this right, it's not making a mistake, 24 million bushels of corn annually for processing into ethanol. The license capacity for Spiritwood and Wimbledon combined totals 2,371,000 bushels, so slightly less than 10% of what they expect to purchase in a year. And it requires a $625,000 bond under the current grain warehouse bond schedule. Dakota Spirit applied the new bond rules, though, that we have just adopted and which go into effect July 1st. They went ahead and adopted the new bond rules when calculating their bond requirement and have filed a $1.4 million grain warehouse bond, more than twice what they would actually have to for these coming couple months. This bond amount includes additional bond coverage because Dakota Spirit is a new licensee, and it's even more additional bonding because their annual grain purchase volume will exceed more than seven times their total licensed capacity. The $1.4 million bond, though, also includes the 30% reduction because they have established and filed a conversion policy of 10 days or less. Now, I want to point out that I have some concerns with their calculations in coming up to this, but they're small issues that I think we ultimately need to resolve, and so I'm going to bring that up when we do scheduling and ask for a work session. But for this particular case, despite that little difference of opinion and doing the math, they're more than twice as much as what the current rule requires for these 2 months. So I don't see that it's an issue with this particular motion. Statutory compliance has been met. Staff recommends that the Dakota Spirit request for a grain warehouse license at Spirit would be approved, effective March 30th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would ask my colleague, 24 million bushels, how many acres is the average for a bushel for corn? I'm trying to figure out how many acres that is.
Well, if I was trying to grow it, you know, you'd probably get about 50 or 75 bushels an acre. But, you know, over there where they have better ground and better farmers, you know, I'm not sure what they actually average. I think, you know, most of those guys are getting probably 200 bushels or better on their corn.
So 120,000 acres of corn.
It's a lot of corn.
I just want to say it was exciting to see an application that hit on so many of our new rules all at one time on the new facility. So we were seeking a higher bond on the seven times their volume. So that triggered a higher bond. And also that they took advantage of the conversion policy. I'm pleased to see that. It's kind of where we want to go, and we had some testimony in our hearing on the new rules that some suggested it wouldn't be used. So I think it's interesting to see that. Pleased to see it. I appreciate the company being progressive and going ahead with the higher bonds, even though it wasn't necessarily required until the actual new rules become in effect in July. And so I just think it's a good application.
And, you know, we're particularly fortunate in this case because, A, you have a company that's trying to work within the rules and like I mentioned, is going way out of their way to actually exceed what they really need for these last few months of this license period. But the timing of it, because as you say, it deals with almost all the new changes that we made, have brought out a couple of questions in exactly how this the math should be done. And now, since we're alerted to it, it gives us a chance to maybe sit down, have a work session, resolve these things, provide a little more clarity before the big surge of relicensing starts in a month or so. So it really is fortunate that this came about at this time.
Is there any other further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the Commission execute contracts with Modern Information Systems Incorporated and Fireside Office Solutions for scanning paper versions of surface coal mining permits.
Second.
An invitation for bids was recently issued for scanning paper versions of mine permits for coal mines that have already been bond released. And we estimate that there are, this is another one of those, like the 24 million, astounding numbers that I'm not making a mistake, approximately 600 three-ring binders containing the old mining permits that are currently stored in basement vaults and on the 13th floor. To free up storage space, a suggestion was made about a year ago to have these documents scanned if we had available funds. And we cannot just dispose of these documents, though, even if we scan them, since the retention schedule for these documents is life of program. However, having an electronic copy will meet the retention requirement. Additional federal funds were requested and awarded for the scanning of the permits in our current grant that ends June 30th. After an initial scan of 1 9-volume permit was successfully completed in late January, an invitation for bids was issued for the larger project. The invitation specified that more than one contract could be issued. We received two responsive bids from Modern Information Systems Incorporated of Grand Forks and from Fireside Office Solutions of Bismarck. Although the bid from Modern Information Systems was at a lower cost than Fireside's, they cannot complete all of the work by June 30th, so a second contract, according to this motion, would be issued to Fireside. Staff does not believe federal funds, which amount to 64% of the cost here, will be available after July 1st. The recommended maximum amount of the contract for Modern Information Systems is $45,000, and the maximum for Fireside is $20,000. Also, it should be noted that the paper version of these permits will go to the State Historical Society when the scanning is completed. And that was something, before we had this motion, but a couple weeks ago at a reclamation staff meeting that I brought up. I was really concerned about the thought of scanning these things, and then in 10 years or something, technology has changed, and whatever kind of a format we've put them into, will it really be state-of-the-art and retrievable and such, and might we wish we still had the paper. So, you know, I feel good about the fact that the paper versions are still going to the Historical Society and will be there, but I've also had more discussions with the people who know more about IT than me, which covers just about everybody on the floor, coincidentally, but been assured that once we have these in a digital format like this, you know, they'll be very safe and much more usable in the forms that we have. So I think it's a really good program, good opportunity to take care of the federal grant that's available through the end of the biennium.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I resisted my comment, Commissioner Crispin, about the scanning, but I have to say it. So I appreciate your work on that. I think it'll be easier to find it, but I'm sure the State Historical Society now appreciates getting 600 of our binders to put in their basement. So
they have a $50 million building. They should have room for a while.
That's what I figured.
At what point do they get to get rid of all those? Do you
Never.
Know?
Never.
Anyway, it's a great idea because we can actually, it's easier to find stuff. We've worked hard in the last, well, since I've been here before, trying to keep all the paper organized, and it's really a good move. So I think it's, thank you. Okay, item BK1. I move the commission adopt the supplemental order issuing second amended corridor certificate number 152 and second amended route permit number 164 in Basin Electric Power Cooperative's 345 kV transmission line Mercer Dunn McKenzie Williams, citing application case number PU11-696.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In August of 2014, the commission issued a corridor certificate and a route permit to Basin Electric authorizing approximately 197 miles of 345 kV and 230 kV electric transmission line. In December of last year, Basin filed an amendment requesting a corridor and route modification to a small portion of that line where to avoid a new oil and gas well and eventually connect to the future Patton Gate substation. We've issued a notice of filing, a notice opportunity for hearing, providing until March 2nd if someone wanted to have a hearing on this. No requests for hearing were received. And really what this comes down to, the corridor and route modification proposed is approximately 0.3 miles of new line extension and realignment to go around the 300 feet north of a proposed new oil and gas well located directly east of the substation. So a very, very small modification. We certainly, of course, always follow the process. We heard back from the State Historical Preservation Office. They have no concerns. They have concurred with the change, and everything really appears to be in order. The only thing I'll point out is that there was discussion about this will eventually connect to the future Patton Gate substation. We'll be hearing testimony on that as part of our Kildare Loop Phase 1 siting application, case number PU14-813. So when we have that, we'll have some questions about the substation may come into play. But for this, very small modification to meet the competing needs out there, and everything certainly appears to be in order. I don't have a cost on that reroute, but I don't. Jerry, did we get a cost on that at all? It was only less than a half mile. I don't probably.
It was not very much.
Not very much is the official answer. probably less than $20,000, but if we need that number, we can certainly get it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in Northern State Power Company's Advanced Determination and Prudence Solar Portfolio Application, case number PU14-810.
Second.
Okay, in November of last year, NSP filed an application for Advanced Determination of Prudence for a resource addition of 187 megawatts of solar generation. The resources will be added to the NSP system through three separate power purchase agreements. The generation facilities are located in the state of Minnesota near the towns of Marshall, Tracy, and Northern Branch. NSP believes that these resources additions will provide an opportunity to cost effectively meet the Minnesota solar energy standard in the solar portfolio. Let's see here. They also believe this will be a hedge against volatility of natural gas prices, and the NSP believes this is a prudent investment. Ironically enough, we've already heard from the commission's advocacy staff. They filed direct testimony February 20th of this year, 2015, stating that NSP's North Dakota ratepayers do not need the capacity or the energy of the solar portfolio, and the commission should deny NSP's application. So we've not yet got to the hearing, which the hearing is scheduled for May 6th, 2015, at 8:30, right here in our commission hearing room. And, of course, the issues will be whether this is a prudent investment to meet the capacity needs and, you know, fill the needs of North Dakota customers. A little background on this, I guess. Prior to me joining the commission at that time made a determination to NSP saying that before you do a resource addition of this size, you come in front of the commission for an advanced determination and prudence hearing, and so you can hear early from the commission on their thoughts. Don't delay until a rate case, because there was a lot of discussion even back then. This would have been the 2006, 7, 8 time frame about NSP making decisions to meet Minnesota mandates that maybe weren't the best for North Dakota customers. So they kind of set this in place. I think it's a very, very worthwhile, good decision that the previous commission made. I'm glad we're going to be able to provide our thoughts directly to NSP on this ADP case. I certainly haven't made any decisions on it, but I will say that it is it's striking to me. This is the first time when we've actually already had testimony back from advocacy staff before the hearing sets, so that I appreciate them jumping on this right away. I've read through their testimony, and I think it's pretty much summarized that they don't feel that it's needed. But NSP equally is clear that they have to do it to meet a Minnesota mandate on solar generation. So it'll be interesting how this ADP hearing progresses. And one thing I would say is whether the commission grants or doesn't grant ADP, the NSP can still make that resource decision. If we grant the ADP, it just gives them a better standing when they come back in time for a rate case. If the commission would deny the ADP, they still can move forward with it, but when they come back in a rate case, it'll probably be a different discussion because we've sent an early signal to them what our thoughts are. So this is, once again, I think the first time that I've seen anything like this, perhaps the first time the commission has dealt with something on the solar mandates, but I believe it's perfect for our discussion given the all the issues out there with energy generation, reliability, and cost.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just reiterate a little bit of what Brian just laid out. This application really does illustrate the diverging state energy policies between Minnesota and North Dakota. Minnesota providing mandates in the absence of demand, and us looking at that and weighing, you know, the benefits and the costs for customers. Really, advocacy staff has taken a strong position opposed to this. I'm going to be really interested in hearing what the company has to say in terms of what kind of benefits this would have for North Dakota customers, as well as the impacts it has for operating the integrated system. And so it's going to be a really interesting hearing, and will set the stage for a lot of future discussions on energy policy between Minnesota and North Dakota and how we operate integrated systems between the two states.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Once again, May 6th, 8:30, right here in our commission meeting room. Item BK3. Excuse me. I move the commission adopt a consent order and Public Service Commission Tower Systems, Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU14-845.
Second.
In December of last year, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Verendry Electric. The complaint alleged a violation by Tower Systems, Inc. Of the North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 4923, basically our one-call system. A little background, Tower is a Minnesota corporation with principal offices in Watertown, South Dakota. So I find that unique, but we did double-check it. So, you know, Minnesota keeps setting their tax code. Not only do they move their businesses to North Dakota, they move them to South Dakota. So I just found that interesting. Verendry, of course, is a North Dakota corporation. A little background on this. We received the complaint. Our staff investigated it and concluded that on September 5th, 2014, Tower personnel provided an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call for work to begin on September 9th, 2014, at 4497 Highway 41, Velva, North Dakota, which, of course, is in the area of Verendry Electric's headquarters. The notice provided that the ticket was good until basically September 30th, so there was plenty of time. Initially, Tower did everything correctly, but based on the investigation, staff concluded that on December 17th, Tower personnel began the excavation while performing the installation of a barricade post in the area I previously described. So 78 days after the expiration of the locate ticket. So they called in for their ticket, the locate was done, and they did the work basically 78 days later. So chances are flags may have been destroyed. Who knows what happened exactly? But the point is that they were not working underneath a valid one-call ticket because it had been long expired. Staff had concluded that the excavation was not made during time of emergency. Basically, this is a consent order today that the Tower agrees that they can resolve this matter without further administrative proceedings. Basically, they said, yes, we did that. Also, the damages were a 7,200-volt underground power cable was damaged. The operator has been reimbursed for the damages, which were just over $500. Three commercial and 10 residential customers lost service for approximately 2 hours. So I guess the fact that it took place in Velva, close to their headquarters, able to get out there and get it fixed pretty quick. Staff's recommended on this, and the consent order says that Tower agrees to pay a fine of $1,300 payable to North Dakota Public Service Commission, within 10 days of this order. And once again, those dollars go directly to the general fund, not to the North Dakota PSC. So I appreciate Verendry making the commission aware of this, appreciate staff's work on this investigation. And I would point out, too, that, you know, this is a – the staff did a very good job in the timing of this. This was late December of last year. Here we are into March, and they've already got all this wrapped up, did their investigation, because there was – there are some cases out there with one call that tend to linger on sometimes, but in this particular case, we had the company got right on it. The people that had been alleged to do the violations, the damages, were forthright with us. They worked through it and were able to let us get to a decision on this very quickly. So I appreciate everyone's work on this, and I just keeps reinforcing. We've got to keep the word out there, and you know, the people have to do things right all the way, not just call your ticket in and do the work 2 months later.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK4. I move the commission adopt the order on interim rates in Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., natural gas service rate increase, application case number PU-1590.
Second.
Okay. In February of this year, MDU filed with the commission a request to increase its rates for natural gas services to become effective March 8, 2015. In February of this year, the commission by motion suspended those rates. So basically, if the commission doesn't suspend those rates, they go into effect. So we suspended those rates in February. But North Dakota law allows that interim rates can be collected by the company if they meet certain criteria. Basically, that previous type authorizations that were approved by the commission are included in this case based on what the rate base and expenses that are in the same kind. As long as those things were approved in the past case, they're allowed to be included in interim rates. So MDU's rate increases based on their projected 2015 year, what they need to request revenue increase of $4.3 million or overall about 3.4%. And so the effect of that would be for the average customer is about $2.40 a month. So what this interim rate really does is it goes into effect, as soon as I said that, I should look for the date, goes into effect April 7, 2015. And so the interim rates will go into effect, and then as the next motion, you'll see we've got public input sessions set up as well as the actual hearings. But one thing that's already unique to me in this case is that the way that they're proposing this MDU is that they're looking at raising rates potentially in the residential rate class as well as the small interruptible rate class, and they have five particular rate classes: residential, firm general, Air Force, small interruptible, and large interruptible. So the interim affects everyone. So if we agree with what they're saying as far as the two classes are, basically you're guaranteed that the firm general, Air Force, and large interruptible will get a return because these interim rates will – they won't go to them because they're just, but the interim, the way it's applied, gets applied to everyone. Now, speaking for me, I know MDU is out there listening. Just because you're asking for that doesn't mean that we don't end up putting across all of them, or it's not always that way, because I know the last rate case we had, there was a lot of discussion about who should be paying some of these costs, residential, large, interruptible. So I suspect that may become an issue as to we'll go through the fact that they need it. I think we'll go through, but then base it out how best to spread load it. So just speaking for me, I think that's going to be an area that there'll be a lot of questions on. But the point of this motion today is it approves the interim rates based on North Dakota law and previous proceedings, and everything in this particular motion is in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just want to point out, without getting into what the ultimate rate case might yield, this interim increase will just minimize the effect of the ultimate change in the rate case by spreading it out over the months leading up to the final decision. So if it turns out that there is no increase, this money would be refunded. If there was a smaller increase, this would make it smaller yet. Bottom line is, in the long run, this will offset whatever happens in that rate case, correct?
Correct. Other thing I would add, though, is there's been times in the rate cases where the company comes in and asks for 2%, or the interim rate is 2%, but the final tends up to be 0.1%, so the final rate could be less than the interim rate. So I look at the interim rate almost more of a way that where it gives us the time we need to fully develop these rate cases, where there was a lot of discussion before I got here when interim rates weren't into play, that the company had a delta in revenue, and then there'd be a lot of pressure for the commission to get a decision within a very small period of time. And so the interim rates really allowed the company to get something where they could be whole, but also allowed the commission to fully investigate the final details of the rate case without the pressure of increasing the revenue shortfall. So there are a lot of different things. I think there are value for the, there is value for the interim rate.
And as much as we strive to do things quickly, whether it's siting or other decision making, for something like this that impacts the large number of people that either gas or electric rates do, it is important that we take our time and have the time to make the best possible decision. So I think this is a good move.
Just a couple of thoughts on this rate increase request. Initially, reading it, I'm seeing that the company is expecting to make $15 million worth of investments in these regions of our state impacted, which is a sizable investment. This rate increase would recover $4.3 million of that, and some of it would be covered by customer growth and some covered by customer contributions. But there's some interesting questions to ask the company in this case in terms of how much is contributed by customers who are being added to the system and the system is being extended out to them. How much do they pay for that? And there's also some pretty sizable O&M cost increases included in this. They're saying based on labor costs and increased labor costs, which is different from a pretty significant increase from the previous rate case. So that's another thing that kind of jumps out at me early on. I'm also reminded nobody likes rate increases. Who does? We don't like them. Customers don't like them. But at the same time, we're also looking at legislation in the legislature, trying to find ways to make more natural gas available to other communities and other places throughout the state, because natural gas is such a valuable resource to have. And I'm reminded of the importance of natural gas. And so this rate case is really a balance of you know, making the investments to maintain the system, to expand it to other customers, while also keeping the costs down. So it's important to remember the benefits of natural gas. So versus propane, it's $1,000 per year less expensive for the average customer. And over electric heat, it's more than $700 per year less expensive. So there are some real added values of having natural gas. We need to be working with the companies like MDU and Xcel Energy who are making these investments and providing that to customers while also keeping the costs as low as possible. So that's really at the crux of this rate increase case.
Is there any further discussion?
The Commissioner Fedorchak reminded me of one key point in this, too. The cost of gas that the company buys is basically a flow-through mechanism. So the lower cost gas in the market, that means lower cost for the customers. These charges we're talking about are basically the fixed charges that MDU would get based, not tied to at all the cost of gas. So the fact that you've got this low-cost gas really is a really good thing for a lot of reasons, but there is a separation. So people might hear that, well, the cost of gas is so cheap, why are they asking for an increase? It's apples and oranges. It's two different sets of costs.
Is there any further discussion? Since you're none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. And finally, the last one for me, item BK5, which apparently my motion disappeared.
Here you go.
I have the order, but not the motion. Thank you, Commissioner. I move the Commission issue a notice of public input session and hearings in Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., natural gas rate increase application, case number PU14-90.
Second.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In February of this year, MDU, a division of MDU Resources, filed an application to increase its rates for an annual increase of revenue about $4.3 million. Basically, the information I covered in the previous motion. The previous motion also improved the interim rate. What we have today is we're setting the stage for a public input session that will be held via interactive television on April 13th, 2015 at 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time and April 14th at noon at the following locations. We have Williston State College and Stevens Hall, Bismarck State College. This is for the evening, April 13th. Bismarck State College, the Votech Center, Dickinson State University in the Kleinfelter Room, and Lake Region State College in the Administrative Room, 123, Minot State University. I'm not going to go through all the rooms, I guess. Minot State University at the PSC and also at Valley City State. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different locations that we'll be using throughout these public input sessions. And once again, one will be in the evening of April 13th, 7 p.m. The next will be over lunch hour, April 14th. The commissioners typically will find locations that we'll go to if available. We can be there. This is where the company will then set the stage about why they're asking for the rate increase request to the public. Any members of the public that would like to show up certainly can at any one of the locations. They can ask questions directly to the company about why they are asking for the rate increase. excuse me. We've seen groups that have a certain concern, will express that concern during these public input sessions. The commissioners were just there to listen, but it does, I think, give us early opportunity to see what the concerns out there might be that then we could follow up with more detailed questions when it comes to the hearing. On that, we actually have the formal hearing set for beginning July 20th at 8:30 a.m. right here in the commission hearing room. And we reserved all day July 20th, all day the 21st. And I'll talk with my colleagues a little bit about if we want to reserve any more time than that. But we've set up the two different dates for the hearings. So we'll have the public input sessions April 13th and 14th. We have the hearing set for July 20th to begin. And anyone requesting to intervene can do any time, but we'd encourage them to intervene by June 1st of 2015. And what I would just a second about intervening status, basically anyone can come to our hearings and say their piece, and when we listen to them. But interveners basically are able to request intervention, and if they have standing, typically it gets approved, quite honestly. And then when the hearings take place, they are allowed to cross-examine any witnesses from the company, any witnesses that the PSC might have. If there's a settlement agreement or a final order that comes out, the interveners have a direct say in that. So of the rate cases I've been involved in, I think back to there was an Otter Tail rate case where a large industrial group out of Jamestown intervened, and they really swayed that hearing because they hired an attorney. They had very good point-counterpoint. So I've seen it at that level. We also had a Mr. Roche intervened at a MDU rate case, an individual that was allowed to go through. And so intervention is a status that gives you a little bit more ability to, I think, potentially sway the discussion because you have direct access to put things in the record and question. So all those things are now set, and everything appears to be in order. Thank Victor and Pat for getting all this taken care of, because one thing, as we talked about in the previous motion, that you know that we want to do a thorough job, but it's also getting all these things organized can take a lot of time that can just tick away. So now we get the schedule set. We know what it's going to be. Everybody can file their testimony. We can get working on it. And then after the hearing, once all the orders come in, we can then get to a decision. So, thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yeah, one question. In your motion, there's kind of a little cough or something. You said case number PU-15-90, correct?
I will have to look, but I believe that's what I said.
Yeah. Okay.
Should be a different date, though, huh?
No, you got it.
Okay. I think that was right. And then, you know, outside of the interveners, I just wanted to point out, you know, in the previous case that we had, when we had the satellite sites available and that sort of thing, there weren't a lot of comments, but I thought that the ones that we got were rational and useful and frankly quite helpful in following through with the rest of the case. So this seems like a lot of work, and I know it is a lot of work for our staff, but I do think it's a very useful process to make sure that without someone having to travel hundreds of miles or something, that on these important decisions in people's day-to-day lives, that they have a chance to offer their input.
I just want to point out that the locations are the same for both the public input sessions for both the evening and noon sessions. It's same locations for both, correct?
With the one exception of the evening one will be at Bismarck State College in Bismarck, and the next day will be at the commission, just because it's harder to get folks into the Capitol on that on that Monday night, the 13th. Other than that, you're exactly correct.
So if I'm understanding this graph correctly, is it this is evening and this is the noon?
No.
Where does it say that?
13th, 14th, 13th.
It shows the date behind it.
So they're all the same except for the BSC and on the 13th and then the commission hearing room on the 14th.
Got it. Okay. Sorry.
Is there any further discussion?
I forgot one other thing, too. Not only can they go to the public input sessions, during the public input sessions, commission will receive email questions at vshook@nd.gov or also at our guest at meeting.edu. So we've got information out there that people can email their questions directly to Victor on our staff, vshook@nd.gov, and I'm sure we'll put all the information on our website. So I didn't catch that until now. So, Victor, you're doing that. Appreciate that.
Any further discussion?
We'll be Twittering and tweeting and all those other things next year, right?
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
All righty. Thank you. That concludes our regular agenda items, and we'll open up for any questions from the audience.
Just curious, going back to BK2.
BK2.
Has anybody ever proposed any kind of solar project for North Dakota?
Not to my knowledge. I know that the companies have potentially looked at them and some of their resources from MDU in the past, maybe even Otter Tail, but I don't believe that. While I've been here, I've seen any before. I know that we ask that question a lot about it and their resource planning, but I can't remember any of ever coming in.
And of course, these are Minnesota projects, and the idea is you'll be looking at what kind of effect it might have on North Dakota ratepayers.
Oh, absolutely, Dave. Typically, when there's a resource when there's a generation asset, there's a number that always gets assigned to North Dakota customers. So, for example, in the nuclear plant where it's solid base load, there's so much goes to North Dakota, so much goes to South Dakota, so much to Minnesota. And I think what the company would probably like is that North Dakota have that same percentage breakdown that we pay for the solar that we would in the nuclear, but I view them as completely different, for me personally. But the question is, we'll see what is appropriate, but it's in the company's filing, they were very clear that they're located in the state of Minnesota to meet the Minnesota mandate. They've got the towns located, Marshall, Tracy, and North Branch, where I think it's very interesting. We tried to pin down NSP about that natural gas generation they've promised to build in North Dakota. We say, well, pick us a spot. Well, we can't give you the spot because we haven't been able to look at all the costs. There's so much variability, but they've already picked these locations. So it's contrary to some of the things, but it's I think you're on the right track with that.
Dave, just to expand on that, you're at the very crux of what an integrated system is. So regardless of where generation resource is or transmission lines, the system crosses state lines. It's all integrated, and the costs of running it are distributed amongst all the participants based on a formula that is determined in rate cases of what's fair, what's North Dakota's share of the system overall costs. And so new generation facilities, be it solar or gas or coal or nuclear, are all spread over the cost of the whole system based on that formula. And so in this case, they're coming to us to say, do you approve of this ahead of time before we even build it? And we can say, yes, we do, in which case they would have surety that they would be able to recover those costs from North Dakota customers. If we say no, then they may or may not be covered by North Dakota customers.
Dave, maybe I could even, I won't talk about this case so much, but I'll talk about a previous case that I was involved in when MDU, they clearly built some wind resources for a Montana mandate. And that was clear to me in the rate case, but the crutch of the decision that I ended up with was, it was clear to me they built it for a Montana mandate. But it was also clear to me that North Dakota was benefiting from some of that electricity. And so how we got to that cost amount, what was used and useful, became a very key point for me in that rate case, and that was a 2-1 decision that the commission was involved in a few years ago. So I think for me personally that that same methodology used in that rate case is something I'll look at doing here, where maybe wouldn't agree with all the costs, but if North Dakota customers are using it, that becomes the challenge of how to determine some of that. So for me, there is some precedence that I'll look at on this, but there also the differences between wind and solar will be some of that as well.
And are there, just to be clear on RC1, that there are no outstanding, Grand Forks Bean has no outstanding claims against it or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Yes, there are claims.
There are claims.
And revoking this license and the fact that the bond ended, that does not release the bonding company from their responsibility. That responsibility carries over for a number of years into the future. So as things play out with the rest of the case, we will have access to that bond if it's necessary.
Do you know how much at this point, or
how much the I don't know the total of the claims. I'm sure Sue would know the amount of the bond if that's your question.
I was asking the amount of claims at this point.
I don't know that. You know, we haven't had the process yet where we have been appointed as trustee, so we could kind of advertise, and until the public has had that sort of notice that we're, you know, expecting people to turn in those claims, we wouldn't for sure know what's out there.
How big was the warehouse? Is that warehouse, do you know? You can email that to me if you want. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
The document stuff you're talking about, were those bids, that $65,000, is that the state and federal dollars, or is that just one or the other? Or?
That's the total amount. And so about 36% of that will be general fund and 64 federal.
Do you know about approximately how much space that took up? It seemed like you guys thought it was quite a bit. I was just wondering if you knew. Our percentage of the space.
Jim, can you compare the vault or the basement to this room? How big is it?
I was just going to say, probably the best way would be to look at it in the basement vault and some we have up on 13th.
How big is that vault? Is it half this room? I haven't been in it, so I don't know. Quarter of this room?
Maybe a quarter of this room.
Some of them are bigger than others.
Okay.
Right.
I'm visualizing two truckloads, Nick. Two small Chevy trucks.
There we go.
Have you been down there?
Yeah. That's what I'm visualizing.
If those three-ring binders, though, are 3 inches high, it would be a stack of binders 900 inches high, so... Well, however tall that is, be a tall pile.
Didn't you say 600 3-inch binders?
Yeah, 600.
So that's.
Oh, yeah, so it'd be
so 1,800 inches.
So it'd be.
All right, here we go.
Divided by 12 is how many feet?
1,800.
One.
Divided by 12.
150 feet.
150 feet, yeah.
150 feet high. So
if hey, I'm from UND. I got you by 2 seconds.
That's right.
Way to go.
Coincidentally, if we set them on the ground, they'd probably be up to our window here.
About, yeah.
Or if we threw them out, they would be the same.
But that does beg a question. If for some reason your computer system would happen to fail, crash, you know, worst case scenario, and these 600 binders are over at the Heritage Center, how do you find them if you need them?
Well, our computer system is all backed up with off-site storage.
Plus, these electronic records aren't they going to be like mobile? Yeah, it's mobile. It's not savable on like not on our mainframe or anything. It'd be like a jump drive, a lot of jump drives.
Also about the budget comments beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
What was the reason, I guess, in appropriations for that originally? I wasn't there for that hearing. Was it kind of a matter of prioritization of the budget? Or
they basically said, you know, with the uncertainty in the revenue picture, they wanted to look at some reductions, and they asked us for, you know, where would you see your priorities falling out? And we said we really don't see any of these as being low priorities, but if we had to, you know, stack them up, the pipeline one was slightly lower because PHMSA is currently doing that, and we would see it as just perhaps waiting another session before we try it again to get the authority to have an arrangement with PHMSA to overtake that program and do it ourselves. So that seemed like a workable route in lieu of not having enough funds to do it this session. However, we did emphasize that we really think it's important to get that program up and running in state, and getting the staff up to speed and the expertise here to oversee those lines. The infrastructure has grown from 2 miles to 600 miles of in-state transmission lines in the last 5 to 6 years. And so we really see that as a growing regulatory function that is best done by North Dakotans. And long term, I think that that's where we'll be pushing this session or in future sessions if it doesn't happen now.
And also, if I could just add on, I think probably another factor in choosing that item as a source of cost savings was the fact that since the budget was prepared, PHMSA has been adding some additional employees too. So,
and the Senate did approve an additional natural gas inspector. So our current program is natural gas. Since we've got our two inspector authorizations, they did give us a third. So they did recognize the growing natural gas infrastructure. So they did approve a natural gas position. So it wasn't that they rejected everything. It was they approved what we currently have jurisdiction on, and really I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Is it something you guys would consider as a contingency in your budget based on however the forecast comes out next week?
I would. I don't know that they'll make a decision on that, you know, in the interim or how those all shake out, but I think contingency plans are important, and this would be one that would potentially fall into that category.
But honestly, I'm hopeful that the budget projections support what the Senate approved, and we're able to go back and try to get more, not have to make cuts further of what we've been given. So it could go the other way, that the positions that came out of the Senate when the budget update come, we could be back today and say, oh, give us your what one position do you want? Right. It could go both ways.
And that's just the reality of the uncertainty, and so you're going to have those contingency plans, and those will be the next best way to deal with the just inherent uncertainty of these industries in our state.
I'm just hopeful the proposal that doesn't go down to one commissioner doesn't get any legs, because I'm the lowest vote getter and percentage getter, so I hope we don't go that way. Could happen.
The Rodney Dangerfield of the commission. Oh, Brian. Anything else? All right. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it. So we'll adjourn for now and reconvene in a few minutes. Let's see. What time is it? I'm so used to saying 11. 2 o'clock. Should we say 2:15 for admin?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you.